This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to the Row One Seat One podcast. It is my favorite week of the year. It is Scenic City Invitational Week. It is Ben, a.k.a. Bostonuga. I am excited like a kid on Christmas. I am just so elated right now. At this point, it is Tuesday night. Scenic City Invitational begins in earnest on Thursday night with Crux Wrestling. And then the official Scenic City Invitational begins Friday night. And Saturday night is night two of Scenic City Invitational, and then Sunday night is Southern Underground Pro. So we have Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, four nights of wrestling, five events. We have the Scenic City Futures as well, and all sorts of stuff going on around those events as well. It's going to be a crazy weekend. We have dozens upon dozens, well, probably up to like 100 people coming, basically, from all over the world. I just picked up one of our people from England. We have people coming from Canada, people coming from all over the country. It is absolute bliss. It is my favorite time of the year. And I couldn't have two more appropriate people to join me than the minds behind Scenic City Invitational, Scott Hensley and Dylan Hales. Welcome to the podcast, gentlemen.
Hola.
Thanks.
Scott Hensley and Dylan are the bookers, the planners, the two most stressed out people when it comes to Scenic City Invitational. Can I get that right?
I think that's certainly fair in my case, and I'm sure Scott would say the same thing.
Yeah, well, and we also need to add Matt Griffin as well.
And Matt Griffin, yeah. Yeah, you guys are the three people who'll be, who take blood pressure medication solely due to Scenic City Invitational.
Well, not solely.
Not solely, but it due in large part to Scenic City Invitational and the things surrounding it and all the stuff you have to deal with. But we have you three to thank for the Scenic City Invitational, all the events going on all through the year. But primarily this weekend with Scenic City Invitational, night one and night two, this Friday and Saturday. This is the fifth year. And Scott, you've been around for all five. Talk about what went through your mind 5 years ago, Scott, because you came up with a crazy idea, and you had some people with you as well, but you kind of helped found this whole thing. Talk about the founding of Scenic City Invitational.
Yeah, I had been involved with professional wrestling since about 2007. I actually refereed an event up in Saudi Daisy, and then I began ring announcing down in Alabama for several years there. And so way back in, 2015, Josh Massey, Ace Rockwell, and I, that's Josh Massey / Ace Rockwell, it's not three people, but we decided, we took a look around at the local talent. And because of Empire Wrestling, it was a crazy amount of guys that were getting a lot of work and character development and storylines. And, you know, a big credit goes to Empire Wrestling for, the way that they ran that show. And just they constantly had good talent coming in there. And Josh and I really wanted to put them up against some of the best guys we could find. And our goal at that time was just to sort of partner with Empire at that event and to help build those guys up and to build something up for the area. And so we reached out to some of the contacts that we had. And, Josh definitely utilized some of his contacts, bringing in Gunner, who is now signed with WWE or NXT as Jackson Ryker. And he brought in Jimmy Rave, who ended up winning it. We reached down and got Anthony Henry, which, I'll never say reach down about Anthony Henry anymore. That's a guy that, he was experienced at that point, but it just had not clicked yet. And so it was a lot of fun to get guys that were up and coming and then some guys that had been established just a little bit. And that was our goal with that. And then it evolved over the next couple of years there into school fundraisers, and it became about elevating guys and then also trying to help out good causes in the process of doing that. And of course, you know, Josh went above and beyond to bring in guys like Matt Riddle and Leo Rush, and you know, guys that have gone on to bigger and better things, and you know, are making a living doing this now. And so that's really our goal now. But you know, in the process of all that, some interesting people got involved, and really thank God that they did, because you know, I give Dylan and his family a lot of credit, all the credit really, as to making our event matter outside of the Chattanooga area. They took it to Twitter. They took it, you know, beyond this area through social media in ways that Josh and I could not. And you know, I'm so excited as to how it has taken off and what it means to the wrestlers in this area and way beyond now, because I do legitimately feel like it's a great opportunity for wrestlers to come in and showcase what they have and to be seen by fans from all over the world, not just in person, but also through IWTV. And it's really just become just a wonderful thing, in my opinion.
Dylan, you and I were at that first Scenic City Invitational. What was your impression of the event? Because you and I went in, I'd say going in, not knowing really what to expect.
No, I actually think it sort of, the back history of our friendship is kind of directly germane to this, Ben.
Yeah,
because
definitely.
You and I had sort of become friends through the Figure Four online board.
We did.
Which is kind of amusing, because I actually was not even a member of that board for that long. But just like in the brief period of time where I was like a regular poster on there, I don't know if you, I can't remember if you were a regular listener to my then podcast, Wrestling Culture. I don't remember exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was it. And you were like, hey, I live in Chattanooga. And I was like, hey, man, there's actually a really good show there that you should check out. And that really good show, of course, was the aforementioned Empire Wrestling Entertainment, which, to my mind, is one of, I would argue that sort of in that era, for its era, it was one of, if not the best sort of overall independence in the southeastern United States in terms of what I like out of an indie. I'm not going to knock anybody else. Places like PWX have done tremendous work, drawn huge crowds, and in many ways you could argue that they deserve that number one spot, and that's totally fair. But for my own aesthetic, Empire, and in terms of guys they used regularly, you know, one of the founders of Scenic City, we talked about earlier, Ace Rockwell, Sean Tempers, Tank, some of the younger guys like Jason Collins, KT Hamill, people like that. There were a lot of guys there that I really liked. Andrew Alexander was there as a performer for a long time and as a booker. I think he was actually probably as good a booker as you could possibly be given the contemporary era of independent wrestling, and using the talent that he had there. Guys like Chip Day, Corey Hollis. So they had a great sort of core of talent there. And as Scott mentioned, that core of talent came out. So this is all stuff that I was following from afar. At the time, I lived in Charleston, South Carolina. My family was here in Chattanooga. I was born in Chattanooga, but I really grew up in Charleston and sort of commuted back and forth over the years. I briefly lived in Chattanooga also in the early 2000s. But I was very familiar with this scene in terms of the talent here. I had gone to a lot of independents when I would visit my family during the period in the early 2000s when I lived here. I'd gone to a lot of independents and seen a lot of the aforementioned wrestlers very, very, very early on in their career at the old UEW promotion. And I felt like I knew the talent was in this area to do a tournament like this successfully. At the time, I was not in the wrestling business at all. I was just a fan, 100% just a fan. And I found out about Scenic City because I saw a tweet that announced that Congo Kong was going to be at this show in Chattanooga, Tennessee, in the building that I knew, right? the Empire Building, because I've been there several times over the years. And I was like, okay, well, Congo Kong's wrestling there, and this is some sort of tournament. You know, I gotta find a way to go there.
Who, in my opinion, stole that show, by the way.
Oh, he was tremendous. And I decided, I was like, I've got to make this trip. This is an excuse to go see my family. I've told both Scott and Josh Massey this privately, and I'll say so again. It turned out that really became a trip I was very thankful for. And if you believe in divine intervention, I'm especially happy that it happened, because I was able to visit my grandmother on that trip as well. And she passed away just a couple days after that. And otherwise, I would not have seen her in those last days. So, you know, that's sort of like also something that I always think about when I think of that first year. But I guess it's true that I didn't really know what to expect, in the sense of, you know, you don't know if it's, I guess, here's what I would say. I don't think we knew if it would feel like a big event. I was pretty certain the wrestling would be good. You know, even coming in, I remember raving to you, Ben, no pun intended, that Jimmy Rave and Anthony Henry were going to absolutely kill it on night one. And they did. And in my opinion, that match more than anything else is what put the tournament on the map. But the bigger issue was whether this was going to be sustainable, whether this was going to be a cool one-off that was super fun, or whether there was going to be more legs to it. And, you know, I appreciate Scott giving me credit. That first year, I was one of the only fans that really traveled from any distance. I took a Greyhound bus to come that first year, in fact. But the person that I actually give a ton of credit to, I said this on Twitter the other day, obviously Josh Massey deserves a ton of credit. You know, obviously Scott deserves a ton of credit. But the person who I think gets forgotten and should not be is Al Getz. Because if Al Getz does not record and distribute via Woo Wrestling, a project he was working on at that time, the first Scenic City Invitational, none of this happens. Because putting the whole issue for so long in the Southeast has been an issue of infrastructure. There's all these talented guys like Scott mentioned it. Anthony Henry has been killing it for years. This isn't a guy who just suddenly got good. I agree with Scott that he clicked more and more over time, but this is a guy that's been a good wrestler forever, for over a decade. But the issue was, there just was not, ever since sort of the peak days of Wildside, you had PWX down here, and you did have, you know, Anarchy that followed up on the Wildside tradition, but there just was not a broad infrastructure. You'd have startup groups like Rampage Pro that would look like they would turn a corner, and then things would sort of fall off. And there just weren't any shows that seemed to fully understand how to integrate the value of social media and the value of content distribution to help elevate talent. And I think Al Getz really understood something very, very early on that a lot of people didn't, which is, there is a market here for this kind of wrestling, and people want to see it. It's a shame that he was not able to reap the full fruits of that, you know, that work that he put in.
But he was but 2 years too early. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. He really was. Al was 2 years too. In fact, I'll say this, and Scott knows this. Al's original idea, and I'm sort of breaking this down here, and I hope I'm not speaking out of line, but I don't think Al would mind this. His original idea was to do sort of a Southern indie version of what has now become IndependentWrestling.tv, the company I work for. And really one of the linchpins in his mind was going to be Scenic City. But it was just so hard to get people on board, and it was a tougher process than I think he thought it was going to be in a variety of other ways. But Al Getz, man, he, and even more so in 2016, as he was the guy who really set up the Q&A panels and the impromptu panels that became a big part of the fan culture in the conference centers and whatnot at the Best Western Heritage Inn. Al Getz deserves so much credit for Scenic City. If we were putting together a Hall of Fame, he's like an easy first ballot guy.
And by the way, the cameraman on that first Scenic City.
Some geek named Matt Griffin. That's right. Matt Griffin. Yeah, absolutely. He was the ringside camera. Actually, there was two of them. Both him and Al, I think, shot ringside.
Yeah.
And they didn't have anybody manning the hard cam, if I remember correctly.
Yeah. That's when I met Matt too. But 2016, I think, is when it really exploded. Would you guys agree there?
I mean. I'll take this first and then pitch to Scott, because I'm in full filibuster mode, to quote Dusty Rhodes. But I would absolutely say that's true. And again, I think Al Getz deserves a ton of credit for that. Listen, I'm not going to like be super humble and pretend like myself and my father as well had no influence on getting people to make the trip. I think we obviously did. And I think in the last couple of years, especially Ben, you have really sort of taken over where I've left off as I've gotten more involved in the promotional end and the creative end. You've sort of stepped up and kept me, you know, kept that from slacking off to help, you know, spread the gospel of this thing. But
I appreciate it.
Realistically, you know, 2016, like it was a series of things that worked out. And you know, my story with Scenic City is a really weird one. In 2015, I was just a fan sitting in the front row. But as part of that, my fandom that year was actually doing an interview for VoicesOfWrestling.com with a guy named Scott Hensley, who's on the phone right now, where we talked about the Scenic City Invitational. And through that process, I ended up meeting Al Getz. I met some other people through that process, started talking to them more and more. 2016 is a very, very strange year for me personally, because the tournament really took off. And a lot of it was getting guys like Matt Riddle very, very early on. I think people forget we booked him before anybody other than Evolve and Beyond, really. So, like if you go back and look, before he went to the UK, before he did PWG, before he did any of these other shows, he did the Scenic City Invitational in 2016. And, of course, Chris Hero, who just happens to be the best independent wrestler of all time, was on those shows, which doesn't hurt. But there was a lot of things going for it that year. I think that was sort of the peak. That was before you sort of had more schisms in the sort of Twitter network. So you had a more sort of broad fan base that was willing to travel in some ways that first year. Although, as I note all the time, I think we've actually sort of romanticized how many people were in the building in 2016, especially on first night. If you go back and look, it's not as many as you think. But still very, very successful shows. And I, you know, look, it was a game changer. It was a game changer because we moved to the school. It was a game changer because of some of the names we got. And it was a game changer for me because I started talking to Al Getz, Scott Hensley, and Josh Massey regularly throughout the entire process of that tournament being booked for months and months. And I was talking to all of them individually instead of in a group. And I sort of realized as the day got closer to Scenic City in 2016 that I was still a fan. I mean, I'm still sitting in the front row in 2016, but with the benefit of hindsight, it is clear to me that there was a gradual turning point where I was being drafted into service by all three of them that year.
Scott, talk about your planning as it went from the dark hall of Empire, this was a dark building, to now a school benefit show, because you have a lot to do with the school benefit show portion of things. And was it your idea to make it a school benefit show? How did it evolve into a school, a thing that really benefits the schools of Hamilton County?
Well, I mean, that was really all Josh Massey there. Okay. I mean, that was... It was him because he had the contacts. He grew up in this area, which I did not. He knows a lot of the guys that have become coaches now, and he really does have a charitable mindset. And so when the opportunity arose that, you know, we could get out of the dark building of Empire, but still work with Empire in a bigger area. And, you know, it had a bigger feel to it because it was in a nicely lit gym. And, you know, with good facilities and everything, you know, not that the Empire building was awful or anything, but nice, I think just optic-wise, I think there are probably people that drove by there and thought, I don't want to go watch wrestling in that building, which, you know, that's their loss. But so with 2016, it was really interesting because we still had Empire. It was closing down. I sort of looked up and their big Crazy from the Heat event, I think may have been their last big hurrah, was at the end of that month. So Empire's been gone for going on 3 years now, which is sort of crazy to think about. But in looking at the roster that we had, you know, it was almost half Empire guys and then half like the world, you know, guys that we brought in or guys from the region. And so we still had a lot of local support that year, And of course, when you're pushing a local football hero and somebody that, you know, came on as good and fast as he did, like Gunnar Miller, you know, that was it was a real blessing to have somebody like that, because there aren't many people like that. And, you know, we just really lucked out having a local hero to be able to promote at that time.
And so 2017 comes around. I think 2017 just continued the ball rolling. Riddle comes back, Gunnar comes back. Riddle and Gunnar have possibly the best match in Scenic City Invitational history. Even though it wasn't terribly long, it was probably the most memorable. Talk about that match and talk about that tournament, Dylan.
So I actually disagree that that was the best match in Scenic City Invitational history. Okay. But it's really splitting hairs for me, because the match I would pick is actually the 2016 final. I think the 2016 final with Chris Hero, Gunnar Miller, Anthony Henry, and Jimmy Rave, which was the culmination of a year-long storyline, and which is probably the best elimination match I've ever seen ever.
Sure,
wrestling.
Okay.
To me, that was almost about as perfect a match you could get, whereas Gunnar and Riddle was about as perfect a sprint you could get. You know, so it's totally different styles of matches. I think most people would have those two at bare minimum in their top five SCI yeah. matches ever, and probably most people would have them one and two. And I can't really argue with that logic. You know, there's some other matches that I think were absolutely spectacular over the years. As I mentioned earlier, I think Jimmy Rave and Anthony Henry really put the tournament on the map. I think we'll talk about it probably in a minute, but Joey Lynch and PCO
yeah.
had like one of the most surreal matches I've ever seen in my life at last year's show. But the 2017 tournament, you know, it was interesting for me, because that was the tournament, that was the first time for the tournament that I was 100% fully part of the team. In 2016, I was sort of existing in this amorphous space where I was kind of part of it, but not really. And then, you know, very sort of an awkward position to be in hindsight. Whereas I joined the team officially very shortly after, in fact, the 2016 tournament. Josh Massey asked me if I wanted to become involved. I said yes. I was fully on board by the time we were doing the 2017 Rumble. And, of course, it was 100% involved in the 2017 tournament as well. But I think for a lot of people, you know, again, it's like picking between kids with stuff like this. I think for a lot of people, I think the 2017 tournament was the sort of peak tournament of the four so far, in the sense that you got the great matches that you want. You got the great moments that you want. I think people were ultimately happy with Riddle as the winner. And by the way, you know, some people who didn't see those shows and whatnot, which I saw comments months and months after, I can't believe they put over a guy who's not one of their guys. And my defense of that is always that I do consider Matt Riddle an SCI guy. And also, you know, if you're going to book the top names in independent wrestling and they're in a tournament format and they never win, why spend the money? So I think that's kind of an absurd critique on its face. But setting that aside and just sort of talking about the tournament itself, you know, it really was, I think, a show. Like, I think those were two shows where the atmosphere in the building was incredible for both nights. And I think on night one, we had the advantage of having Tank's retirement in the main event with Riddle, which, you know, you're not always going to get that on night one. It's always harder on Friday nights to put people in the seats. I don't care. It just is. But we had a hook. We really had a strong hook in 2017, you know, because who wants to miss that? If Tank loses, you're missing his retirement. So that was a huge hook. It was a great, huge emotional moment. And then, of course, when you've got a guy like Riddle, who's as special as he is, when you've got Gunnar Miller, who was still sort of at his peak. In fact, I would argue maybe that might have been the peak of his performative capabilities, where he was sort of blurring that line, and he was kind of a heel, almost like a Terminator-style character. And, of course, you've got Joey Lynch, who was ascending through the ranks at the time and clearly being positioned as the next guy to win this thing, if not get it that year. You've got Anthony Henry there, who was a guy a lot of people felt should have won in 2016. And then we had this wild card dark horse that was booked on a whim by me, probably the first booking I ever did for Scenic City, booking him on a whim in a San Antonio restaurant over Royal Rumble weekend, a guy named Kurt Stallion, who we really kind of took a big risk on at the time because he wasn't that well known yet and really hadn't done a lot. But my contention was we could present him in a way where he would really get over and become a huge, huge part of what we did, which he was for that year and really was last year as well. And, you know, Stallion, I'm very proud to say that Stallion and Riddle politic to get that singles match that we sort of set the table for at Scenic City recently in Evolve. And I just feel like the pieces in 2017, not that the pieces weren't good or even as good other years, but I think it was sort of an optimum year in terms of guys where you could sort of suspend your disbelief and think this guy has a chance.
You guys have both touched on it a little bit, you know, and Scott, you've touched on, you know, bringing the local guys and mixing them in with the, you know, quote unquote, the world. Dylan, you've talked about, you know, mixing in the, you know, the meeting with Kurt Stallion in San Antonio and meeting with Riddle before he was on the scene and stuff like that. It seems like you guys are making a stew or a chili or something like that and picking your 16 guys for the tournament. And, you know, I've had many conversations with you in the car and stuff like that on really what goes into picking the perfect 16 guys, because it's not like PWG where you're picking the all-star team, and it's not like, you know, you guys are picking up a mix here. And Scott and Dylan, I both want you guys to talk about what goes into the perfect mix of guys, because it's you do it better than most as far as the right 16 as opposed to the most star-studded 16 or the most obvious 16, I guess, would be the way to say it.
Yeah, I'll start then, I guess. Man, it changed so drastically from 16 to 17, and you can see the Dylan Hill's influence if you look at the roster that we had in 2017. I think that it's really clear that Empire is not still running, and it's really clear that this is now a much bigger thing because of the people that are booked for it. It's no longer just a Southeastern tournament, but at the same time, the Southeast is really well represented with guys from the Carolinas and guys from Georgia and, you know, still guys from this area. And I think it's always a different challenge every single year because we look at the surrounding environment and it's always changing. You know, over the last year, I mean, look at how many guys have been sort of poached off the independents, and even guys that WWE just signed to be producers just to maybe keep them off the independents. And so, you know, it's so different each year, but it's always been important to us to give the local guys that want the ball, that don't just say they want the ball, but that are out there, you know, running for a pass, for a football analogy there. But the guys, you know, this year we've got Joey Lynch back in. He's come to, you know, be possibly the first ever person to repeat. You know, maybe it'll happen eventually, and maybe it'll happen this year. We've got, you know, Anthony Henry is a lower Georgia guy, but he's still a guy that has ties to this area and has been in this area and has been a Scenic City guy since the beginning. So, you know, I consider him like sort of a hybrid local and name guy. And then you've got Jaden Newman. You know, he gets to return to his own high school for his first ever tournament. And you look at a guy like that, you know, his family runs a wrestling promotion here in town. And it's, I don't know, I think some people could think maybe that it's just like handing a guy something. But if you really look at his schedule and you look at his work and you look at everything that he's doing and involved with and how he's evolved, then you see, like, Jaden wants the ball. And we want to hand it to those guys like that that are out there. You know, he's just been up in St. Louis and Washington, D.C., and he was second round in Chikara's Young Lions Cup, and he goes out to Texas. And, you know, there aren't any other guys in this area doing that other than Joey Lynch and Matt Lynch that are getting after it. And those are the guys we want. You know, we don't want the guys standing around, you know, make me a star. It's like, no, we run four times a year. You have 48 other weekends or 48 other weeks to go out there and raise your profile and to co-promote with us. You know, we want to give guys a platform, but we want the guys that are working hard and aren't just giving it lip service.
Yeah, I more or less agree with everything Scott just said. You know, I think we've shown a willingness to work with guys who maybe, you know, are lesser known outside of the region. And but I think what he and I are both looking for, and Matt Griffin as well, are guys who are going to go to that next level. You know, I come out of the DIY punk rock scene yet, right? Like, and in the scene that I come out of, it's about building alternative institutions. So there wasn't a infrastructure in place in the South, even though the talent was here. So my mission, the way I've looked at it, and what I've tried to do in wrestling since I've become regularly involved, which more or less started in 2016, but really escalated at the beginning of 2017, is to build those institutions, to get them to be as big as possible, and to try to create an infrastructure in this region. And one thing I'm proud of is we're in a position now with Scenic City where we're kind of in a weird space. You know, we look at the field and we go, do we have enough name value? And then it's like take a guy like Kevin Koo, who's in this year's tournament, right? Now, if you're somebody who only knows Kevin Koo from his days wrestling as Kevin Park on the Georgia indie scene and some other places, you might look at him, oh, he's a pretty good hand, but, you know, he's what, like, what's the deal? But to me, that's telling on yourself. This is a guy who's a regular in Black Label Pro, which is one of the biggest independents in the Midwest. He's, you know, a semi-regular at this point, been there several times and beyond, which is one of the biggest independents in the country, if not the world. He just debuted in GCW. Obviously, he's part of the team with me at SUP and a guy who's been a breakout player there at Southern Underground Pro, which is a promotion that I believe has really proven its value as one of the top independents in the Southeast as well, along with Action Wrestling down there south of Atlanta, which Matt Griffin runs. And, you know, like, if you're looking at a guy like Kevin Koo and wondering what's the deal here, like that's telling on yourself. And on top of it, and sort of more importantly to that, how do you put, like, bucket do you put a guy like Kevin Koo in? Is he a star or is he a regional guy? Well, I think we have the luxury now, because of the infrastructure we've built up, because we're willing to work with other promotions, because we're willing to try and take some risk on talent, I think we can say, okay, yeah, Kevin Koo's not one of the top 20 guys on the independents. Absolutely not. He wouldn't tell you so himself. He's probably not one of the top 40 guys on the independents, to tell you the truth. But he's also not just some guy. You know, he has value. Somebody that's looking at this show in this region might say, oh, cool, I saw him at a TWE show, or I saw him at an Action show, or I saw him at a SUP show. But also somebody might say, I saw him on IWTV at Black Label Pro, or I saw him at Beyond. And that's one of the things that I'm proudest of about the tournament, is that we've effectively been able to use the tournament and use the sort of infrastructure that sort of formed around the tournament, because I don't know if Action Wrestling or SUP exist if SEI doesn't, to be honest. And I think I'm in a position to speak on both. and we've been able to sort of create space for these guys to get more and more to the next level. So as the process has changed, as time has gone on, one of the things that has really happened is, when we're thinking about picking that perfect 16, I feel like we have to be, and this is a struggle sometimes, we have to be increasingly cognizant of the fact that just because we've worked for somebody for two or three years doesn't mean that they haven't become a star at a level much higher than the first time we booked them. You know, like, Anthony Henry is not the guy he was in 2015 in terms of star power. Joey Lynch isn't the guy he was in 2015 in terms of star power. Like, I could rattle off a list of a bunch of other guys. So that is, you know, I mean, look at the Future Showcase tournament from last year. You know, four guys from that field went into the tournament proper this year. Jaden Newman, O'Shea Edwards, Kevin Koo, and Marco Stunt. I want you to think about where those four guys were in August of 2018 versus where they are, not just in the Southeast, but in the entire context of the broader indie scene in August of 2019. It is a big difference.
Marco just announced he signed with AEW today. I mean, let's think about where he was a year ago.
I know. It's crazy.
It's amazing. What a rise. And then last year's tournament, sorry, I didn't mean to, you know, interlude, but I just, it's an amazing little stew that you guys put together. So then last year's tournament, my Lord and Savior PCO was in it. That's really all that needs to be said. He reigns supreme.
Can I say something about PCO here? Can I say something about this guy?
You can take credit.
All right. First of all, I want to thank Mikey Blanton, who helped us out somewhat with PCO, and we were trying to get him last year. The Black Label Pro promoter, good guy, good friend.
Friend of the show.
But I don't want to go into business dealings. That's nobody's business, right? But if you want to talk about a guy like that was a name and a player and a guy who was in the big time for years and every major promotion that's ever existed in the U.S. in my lifetime, this guy was a performer in at one point or another, including a title holder in several of them.
And Puerto Rico and Canada, not even just the U.S.
Absolutely. This guy was a joy to do business with. I'm sure Scott will back me up on this. This guy, it is astounding. And you, not only was he great to do business with, you go and you look at what he did, and the Cyrus match on night one was a very strong Haas fight, and then that match with Joey Lynch on night two. I mean, I can't say enough good things about this guy. There's a lot more I can say about 2018. I'll let Scott talk about it first if he'd like. But PCO, I love that dude. He still retweets our stuff. We booked him one time. Still retweets our stuff. Great guy.
He's a gem. He's an absolute gem. And just to rub it in, I have met Destro and you guys haven't. So, you know. Destro's a wonderful man, by the way. He's a great guy. He's a great human being. And his biceps are bigger than Hulk Hogan's.
Yeah, my comments on 2018 would just be, you know, it was completely a continuation, I felt like, off of 2017. I thought it was a smooth transition off of that. You know, we were able to sort of push some limits. We brought in Nick Gage, of all people, to a school. And there's a famous picture out there that says, sponsored by Rehoboth Baptist Church, which is a great local church, by the way. They have a great pastor, and we are like sort of brother and sister churches with them, my church and their church. But, you've got a guy who was a convicted, like, bank robber out there with that. And that just shows the diversity of what we are able to bring. People will chant. I think at one point people were chanting, like, Nick freaking Gage or something. Or, they tone it down to, PG-13 so that everybody can enjoy it. And there's a famous picture of one of my friend's sons getting Nick Gage's autograph last year. And, it just warms my heart that we're able to show a different side of some guys and that we're able to make a mix of the local guys that are getting after it, the regional guys that, look at who we had last year and all the tours and everything that these guys have been on now.
Too Cold, I mean, Scorpio.
Going backwards, yes. I mean, Too Cold Scorpio, one of the most established guys we've ever had in the tournament, if not the most established guy we've ever had. And, that second round or that second night match with Darius, he really turned it on there. And, there were glimpses in that AJ Gray match as well. But after that event, I mean, look at the guys that have gone on to something bigger, and credit to them for their hard work. Kurt Stallion with Evolve. Darius Lockhart went over and did a European tour. You know, PCO signed with Ring of Honor. AJ Gray went and did a tour of Mexico. Gary J and Jake Parnell are still out there killing it. Fred Yehi has gone over and done tours of Europe. Mance Warner is one of the biggest stars at MLW now. You know, Gage is still reigning supreme with GCW and the stuff he's involved with. And then Kerry Offal and the Carneys, I mean, my goodness. You know, they got flown out to California this year and to wrestle SCU. And, you know, they're in King of Trios this year for Chikara. And, you know, it's so much fun to get these guys that are really getting after it. It's so, you know, you put up with so many headaches of trying to put it together and listening to people's bull, and then you look at what the event is about elevating those guys and, you know, about changing lives, literally. I had someone last year come up to me, or a wrestler, and tell me, thank you for changing my life. You know, how do you even respond to something like that? But that's the platform that we really want to give. And last year was the first year for the Futures event. We'd wanted to add something. In the past, one of the people working with us had suggested, you know, what about like a softball game, like wrestlers versus fans? And that would be a lot of fun. But if we look at our goals of elevating wrestlers and raising money for good causes, you know, the Futures event is able to accomplish both of those things. And look at what it's meant to us this year, with more guys from the Futures event last year in this year's tournament than guys that were ever in the tournament before. You know, it's 4-3. And so, I mean, it was a huge transitional year last year, both behind the scenes and in what we were presenting. And I'm so proud of all those guys. And even Cyrus last year, you mentioned Cyrus and PCO. Cyrus is headed to Japan. You know, it's so exciting and fun when you look at what's happening with the guys that you're working with.
And let me piggyback on that. First of all, that very reason is the reason that I'm even in wrestling. You know, I'm not interested in like having the biggest show in town. Or like, by the way, I'm not criticizing people for that. I think your goals should be as explicit as possible when you're involved in wrestling on the promoting and creative end. What I get excited about is when Marco Stunt gets signed. That's what excites me. You know, now obviously you want the shows to be good. You want to perform. You want these guys to have a chance to perform in front of as big a crowd as possible, both, you know, watching online and even more specifically in the building. But that's what I want. I want to help elevate guys so that they can make their dreams come true. And by the way, not because I'm some gigantic altruistic person who's benevolent or anything like that. I just, for my own ego, that's what I want to do. Like, I'm not above admitting it. I'll say it flat out. That's the part of it that strokes my ego too. So it does so happen that I try to work with guys who I like and who I think deserve it. But I'm not pretending that I'm above that. I do want to stress two things real quick about 2018. Scott sort of mentioned it in the wrap up there, but it was a huge transition year actually in a few ways. So Josh Massey was no longer with us after the 2018 Rumble. We parted ways. You know, I will always have a lot of respect and fond memories of working with Josh. I would not be in wrestling at all if not for him. He's the one who took a risk over the objection of a lot of people who didn't think that some quote mark end quote should be allowed to come over the rail and get involved. So I really do appreciate that. But that split happened. That was, you know, we sort of. After the tournament, that's when we were almost immediately after the tournament was really when we pulled Matt Griffin in. Matt's always been a part of the SCI team, but he really became sort of the official third person in the triumvirate, so to speak, almost immediately following the tournament last year. And the other big thing was we moved to Saudi Daisy. So the 2016 and 2017 tournaments were at East Hamilton High School, which is where we had the Scenic City Rumble earlier this year. I thought they were great partner. We enjoyed working with him at the Rumble this year. Did great there. Big crowd there for that. Really good show. But you know, Saudi Daisy's a tremendous partner too. And we decided to move up the road, do it there. The gym's bigger. There are some advantages and some disadvantages, like any partnership. But one of the big things about it is, it's just a very, very, it's a very spacious environment to watch a wrestling show. There's more places to flee when people dive, I think, it's Saudi Daisy. That's certainly one example. Or when Nick Gage comes running at you with a chair or whatever. I admit that the bigger bleachers, I think, make it optically deceptive sometimes in terms of, when you're trying to produce a product that's going to go out there digitally for people to watch, you'd like to have those bleachers look more full than they are sometimes. But it's nice to be in that big, spacious building with good air conditioning, a great locker room that's huge, where everybody has plenty of room to move around, and great, great sponsorship there. A school that really works with us on promoting and really gets some sponsors and gets some things behind us to really get the energy we need to make this thing as successful as possible. So last year was a turning point in a lot of years. I would actually say, and I wonder if Scott would agree with me as we sort of transition to talk about this year, I feel like 2018 was sort of the end of the first chapter of the Scenic City Invitational. And I think 2019 is the beginning of the second chapter.
Scott, would you agree? Scott, are you still with us?
Can you hear me?
There you go, Scott. Would you agree 2019 is kind of the start of chapter two?
I don't know that I really think about it that way, or that I've ever thought about it that way. I mean, I guess it could be argued. And if Dylan is having that opinion, then it certainly can be argued. But I don't know. I mean, like, you just look at all the guys that were so important in the previous 4 years or 3 years, and then, you know, so many guys moved on to other things. You know, we had Tank retire, Kyle Matthews got hurt and retired, Gunnar Miller got hurt and took his hiatus. You know, so much of what we started with changed, and we adapted to that, I feel like, because, you know, we look at what we're doing this year and we're still on pace. Even if some of the locals don't turn up on night one, how do you recreate a Tank retirement? I had a coach tell me, it was one of the Saudi Daisy assistant coaches. He said, you know, I always sort of, you know, respected wrestling. He goes, but after seeing that Tank retirement, he goes, I really respect wrestling and what you guys do and what they do. He said, let me tell you why. He said, one of the things that stands out to me, he said, was Tank came out for his retirement speech. He said, I saw a guy physically, like, grab his son up and say, you stand up and show Tank respect.
I mean, yeah,
it's funny, but at the same time, it's like, wow, you know, you think about all the road trips that Tank made over the years and all the crazy guys he wrestled, you know, from generations to styles to different things that he did there, styles of wrestling, and also AJ Styles. But, you know, I watched Tank wrestle a match against Corporal Robinson once, and live in person. It was at one of the probably Carnage Cup type deals. But they're punching each other as hard as they can, in my opinion. I don't know. They would probably disagree with that. But they're punching each other really hard in the head, and Tank is going harder, harder, harder. I mean, if you can't respect a guy that just, you know, can take the hardest that you can dish out and then give it right back, and I mean, he is a special guy, and we're lucky to still have him, you know, sort of advising and helping out. We've branded an event with him coming up October 26th. We're having Tank's Scenic City Throwdown. I'm going into promoter mode here, but already announced, you know, we have Wardell Walker and Chris Dickinson. So we're still bringing in new things to Chattanooga, and we're doing it through the channels that we've established. So it's a lot of fun. But going back to the chapters thing, I mean, I think each year for me is a new chapter. So I don't know that it's completely a chapter closed and a chapter opened as far as all those together. But I think each year is.
Now, before we touch on this year's tournament, just got to pay the bills here. On the Place to Be Nation pop feed, the Sarcastic Four continue to look at 71 with a third of three-part episode of Marvel Age. Jennifer Smith welcomes Tim Cable to the Freakout Drive-In with a live watch of Lake Placid. The hard-traveling fanboys continue Spider-Man Month with examination of the classic story Kraven's Last Hunt. DC4U dive into the monthly current events, including announcements from Comic-Con. Pop Goes to the Movies with Andy and Jennifer break down Spider-Man Far From Home and look at the future of MCU. Jason and Andy pay tribute to the Rock and Alternative albums of 94 in a special edition pod. Andy Etherton rides solo at Pop Goes to the Movies to review the new Lion King remake. Greatest Song of the 80s tournament continues. There'll be six polls a day posted for round one. You can get on the action on Facebook by searching PTPN's Greatest Song of the 80s tournament and liking the page. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, I welcome Jade Newman to Row 1, Seat 1. No Holds Barred is back with Aaron and JT. In the latest episode of the Place to Be Nation podcast, JT Scott and John D'Amato break down Survivor Series 89, one of my favorite pay-per-views ever. Don't miss the pilot episode of an ECW-focused podcast entitled Place to Be Nation Extreme Three-Way Dance with JT Rosero, Jennifer Smith, and John D'Amato as they review the concept of the show and what's to come. On PlaceToBeNation.com, Place to Be Nation's tribute to 94 is off and running with a brand new piece on Woodstock 94, where JT looks back at Bob Backlund challenging Bret Hart for the WWF title on Superstars. Glenn's weekly walk-in is coming. And on social media pages and board is at BigLowPro34.ProBoards.com for information on joining our GWE pay-per-view and TV match ever project. Get in the conversation today and start researching your lists. Now we have a new sort of chapter. Well, it is a new sort of chapter in both your minds coming up this year. Talk about this year's tournament, how it differs from those in the past.
I think it differs in a lot of ways. And I do agree in sort of in general with Scott's point that every year differs in some ways. And because partially for the reasons he mentioned, which is that there's just sort of a shifting landscape at all times and you have to adjust both locally, regionally, nationally, even internationally in this point. But the thing about this year's tournament, like, okay, this is what I would say the biggest differences are. So last year's tournament, you know, We were still sort of completing some stories and some things that we had been building to over years and years and years, namely with two people who had been linchpins, and in one case still is, and Joey Lynch and Corey Hollis, right? And that was a long term. So if you go all the way back to the very first tournament in the first round, guess who Corey Hollis beats in the first round of that tournament? Joey Lynch. So there was sort of a long arc there. And, you know, for that reason, I think that things just sort of naturally changed. I mean, I think if you were looking at the early tournaments, right, not to be like, I think this is fair to say, Scott, and I'm going to break the fourth wall a little bit on this, and Scott might cringe, but that's too bad. I think it's fair to say that if you look at the early tournaments, there's a sort of obvious logic to everybody who won. Jimmy Rave, Gunnar Miller, Matt Riddle, Joey Lynch. I'm not saying that they were surefire, 100% telegraphed. That's not what I'm saying. But I think there was an obvious logic to it, and you could see where the progression was going to go. If you were there the first year, you probably had a pretty good idea Gunnar Miller was going to win in 2016. If you were there the second year, you probably thought it's either going to be Matt Riddle or maybe Anthony Henry who's going to win in 2017. If you were there last year, I think you thought almost for sure Joey Lynch was going to win. You just wanted to see how it was going to happen. So what I think makes this tournament a little bit different is, as we sit here right now, I don't think people have really that firm an idea of who's going to win. I've heard some people say, oh, well, I think it's definitely going to be this guy or these guys don't have a chance or blah, 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 blah. There's been like a lot of broad, I've seen some broad sort of claims about that, but not for the most part. I mean, it looks to me like the two favorites are Anthony Henry and O'Shea Edwards, just sort of following the themes I've seen mentioned. But I've seen people pick AC Mack. You know, I've seen people pick Marco Stunt. I've seen people pick Jade Newman. I've seen people pick Kevin Koo. I've seen people pick Joey Lynch for a repeat. In fact, a lot of people recently have been doing that. So there, I think this year's tournament is very, very much wide. I've seen people pick Brett Eisen. I think this year's tournament is very, very, very wide open. I'm not naive enough to think that people believe that all 16 guys have a shot. You know, I would love to do that. And obviously, as a promoter, my job is to make people believe that all 16 guys have a shot as best I can. But I think if we're being really, really honest, I think this year more than any other year, you can really come up with strong, credible arguments that don't stretch the bounds and reason of stretch credulity to believe that a dozen guys in this field could win. I think that's where this year's tournament is a little bit different. On top of the fact that 13 of the 16 have never been in the field before, it's just, I think there's not a blowaway, obvious, decisive front runner. And that's one of the reasons, by the way, that Anthony Henry and Joey Lynch needed to be the main event on night one, because I feel like not only are these two guys synonymous with Scenic City, not only are they both tremendous professional wrestlers, I think having that match in that main event slot on night one, it really has got to be making people think, is this the match that's going to determine the winner? And I love when you can do stuff like that.
Scott?
What's specifically the question here?
Oh yeah, so how is this going to be different? What is your what goes into 2019 being fresh?
Yeah, and a lot of what Dylan just said there, but you know, I think because of the landscape, I think it is so much or so important to create the next round of stars, or I will claim that we create stars, but I think it's important to elevate the next round of guys that want it. And in just talking about the things that we've talked about already, you know, we have four guys from our futures event last year in the tournament this year. We have 13 new guys in our tournament this year. But then also, you know, we have three just amazing guys that have been in the tournament before. You know, nobody seems to be picking Billy Buck, but I mean, one Buck shot, and I mean, Marco's not going to withstand that. You know, and Billy Buck, I mean, Dylan, of course, would tell you this, but you know, I also believe it, but Billy Buck is easily one of the best wrestlers in the Southeast. You know, he's a hybrid guy that can work with any style, and he gets out there and, you know, just competes with anybody, and he tells a story with what he does, and with the whole team tag thing, I mean, that's added just depth to him. But then also, you know, Joey Lynch and Anthony Henry, like you just talked about, you know, either one of those guys could easily win this year. It's a different year because there are going to be so many new guys in this year. But it's also just, you know, it's going back to that mix, though. We've still got the mix. It's still a lot of area guys versus the world. You know, we got Daniel Macabe. We haven't even mentioned him yet. Daniel Macabe from Canada. And then, you know, Tony Deppen from the Northeast that, you know, just got flown out to PWG. He's in Bola this year. He's on a sold-out tour of GCW in Japan right after our tournament. I mean, these are guys that, you know, you can't just say, well, they wouldn't hand him the ball. Yeah, we would. We proved that with Riddle.
So we're crunched a little bit on time, but I want you guys to each give me one match that's going to tear the house down and one match that's going to sneak up on people And you guys can't use the same matches here, but one match that will really surprise people and say, whoa, that match completely blew me out of the water, and one match that's just going to completely tear the house down. Dylan, you start.
So I'm going to say the match that I'll go with tear the house down first. I think Slim J and B-Boy are going to go absolutely insane. I mean, these are two legitimate independent wrestling legends, and that's not like me being hyperbolic. They actually are. They're from totally different regions. I saw Slim post the other day on Facebook about how he used to watch B-Boy, and now he gets to mix it up with him. So he's obviously excited for the match. And here's the thing. These guys have been around for a long time, and they can still go. They can still go at an extremely, extremely high level. Like, these might be two of the best guys in independent wrestling, period, right now. And I really just feel, and to me, that's it's also a pick 'em, you know? I mean, I don't really feel like you can look at that and go, who's going to win? I saw somebody today who picked Slim J to win the whole tournament. I've also talked to somebody who thinks B-Boy's winning the whole tournament. I really feel like that match has high show stealer potential for night one. As far as a sort of under the radar match, I've said this from the very beginning. If you listen to me do other podcasts on this, you're probably going to be annoyed by me repeating it. I don't care. Kevin Koo and Nick Iggy is the sleeper in round one. It would not surprise me at all if those two guys had the low-key banger of the whole weekend, including a Southern Underground Pro, including Crux, including the Showcase, a Future Showcase. It would not shock me in the least if the match that people were like, holy crap, I can't believe how good that was Kevin Koo and Nick Iggy.
Scott, give me your match that's going to tear the house down and match that's going to surprise the crap out of people.
I'll say the match that's going to tear the house down is going to be that main event. Joey Lynch and Anthony Henry, just without a doubt, you know that they're what they're capable of, and you know they're going to go out there and just absolutely kill it. And as everybody has sort of said, you know, the winner of that match is sort of slated to sort of win it. I mean, based on the field and the people that have been talking about it, everybody seems to think that. The match that is going to just be sort of a sleeper match, I think, will be Makabe and Tony Deppen. That's a match of two guys that have never been in this area, and it's the only match. Well, Makabe did come through Nashville there, but as far as south of Nashville, you know, every other match on the card has a guy that's wrestled in Chattanooga or the area before. So I think that's going to be the sleeper match because, you know, both of those guys can do the hard hitting, can do the technical, can, you know, fly when they want to. You know, Makabe occasionally busts out that dive. So I think that's going to be the sleeper match.
That's the match I'm looking forward to the most, to be honest. I've had both of those guys on the podcast. Those guys are two of my top 10 wrestlers on the planet. As far as me, I think that J.D. Drake and O'Shea Edwards is going to be a tear-the-house-down, hoss battle, two big dudes just beating the absolute crap out of each other match that people are going to be talking about for months and months and months. I think they're absolutely going to bring it. And I think Brett Eisen and Matt Tremont are going to... I think Brett Eisen has a chip on his shoulder the size of Montana. And I think you guys would agree. And I think that going against Matt Tremont... he is going to be motivated, and Tremont always brings it. And Tremont is going to be in a very different environment. I think Tremont is going to be motivated as well to prove that he can be very versatile. And I think they're going to have, again, as my Nashville friends say, an ass beater. And they're going to tear the house down as well. The other matches we didn't talk about, but are going to be great matches as well. You guys talked about Marco Stunt and Billy Buck. I mean, Marco Stunt just signed with AEW, so we know what he has. And Billy Buck has been the glue of the Southeast, really, over the last, God, what, 5-10 years, really. They're going to have just a heck of a match. And then Jaden Newman and AC Mack. Jaden Newman was on the podcast last week. Jaden Newman is as motivated as any human being possibly could be. And AC Mack was on the podcast as well a few weeks ago. And, man, he's smarmy. We'll say that. He's got a big mouth.
That's Jaden's an understatement.
Jaden's going to want to shut it.
One comment about the Tremont and Eisen match.
Yeah.
I think two of our referees already deferred that match to Doug Markham. They don't even want to be in there with those guys. I mean, we try to really contest the Scenic City matches under what we call a gentleman's agreement referee discretion. But with those guys, like, you know that the agreement is whatever you have to do. So, you know, they're not going to be listening to a referee.
So, I mean, all that talent, and that's just the first round. And, I mean, those are, I mean, you could conceivably say that all those matches are toss-ups. There's not a gimme in any of those matches, and I have to commend you guys for that, because there really isn't a, oh yeah, this is, you know, there's not a a squash to be had really there. So the booking has to be impossible, frankly, for you guys. But there's really not a layup there in those matchups. The last thing I want to talk to you guys about, and something you guys don't really get to experience as much, but is the real draw for me, and I think a lot of people there, and you guys can probably comment on what you see about it, is the fan experience of Scenic City Invitational Weekend. Scenic City Invitational has become a destination weekend as time has gone on. No place. Scott put up a quote for me on Facebook, and I really meant it, where, you know, I get 75 to 100, you know, my best friends in the world, you know, converging around for, you know, a weekend of just pure bliss and joy. And we get to bond over the one thing that we love, you know, for a full weekend. And we get to do stupid things like have a prom and have a cake eating contest. And, you know, Steve McCash is doing a wing eating contest. And we're going to do a VHS horror podcast. And we're going to do a baseball game. And we're going to do karaoke. And we're going to do all sorts of fun stuff like that. And we get to have all these fun events, but we also get to bond by the pool and, you know, just hang out and catch up with each other. And people from literally all over the world, I picked Keith up from England, you know, people from coming from Canada, you know, all over the country. I mean, California, Iowa, North Carolina, Jersey, just literally all over the world. My mother made cookies for 90 people, so which I'm sure I'll get you guys some cookies, don't worry. But we've made this, with huge help and huge thanks to Dylan, your father, and Al Getz. All the credit in the world goes to those two guys for turning this into a fan destination weekend. But talk about what this has blown up into, because, you know, you guys booked a wrestling tournament and it turned into a con, basically.
I mean, this wasn't a plan, and I think that's why it works. I mean, there are planned events that go on, as you mentioned, the things that are organized for this year, things that have been organized in the past. But I think what has made Scenic City a little bit different is there's an organic quality to how all of this has sprung up. You know, the Best Western Heritage Inn on Lee Highway tolerates us. The City Cafe is affixed to the building. My old man's able to get the conference rooms, which is great. But to me, what makes it work is that there's not a sort of weird, like, pressure or there. It's a gathering of extremely eccentric, crazed wrestling fans from all different walks of life, from all over the place, legitimately all over the place. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it that's really manufactured. And, you know, what I like about it too is, you know, from a promoting and booking standpoint, it's great to have all these people captive in one place, because you can hear them talk, particularly after night one, and know what they think is going to happen on night two. And if you need to call an audible on the field or emphasize something a little bit different in presentation on night two, that gives you some, it gives you an extra tool in the toolbox. But it really is unlike anything else. I think a lot of people might hear people talk about this and think, oh, it's like Mania Weekend, or it's like some other. First of all, it's not like Mania Weekend. We're not nearly that big. But second of all, it really isn't. It has a unique quality that's very, very hard to explain. There's a degree of camaraderie that's very hard to fully articulate. But I'm very, very, very proud of what we've done. And I'm proud that so many people come from so far away for our wrestling event and to hang out with her friends.
Well, that's okay. We'll Dylan, we'll just that's a good place to leave it, actually. We SCI has become just near and dear to my heart, and just so much thanks goes out to your father and Al for kind of turning this into something bigger than just a wrestling tournament. And it's turned into something great. And it's turned into something just my week is full, and I couldn't be happier. And your week is full with entirely different things, but you're gonna be presenting wonderful wrestling to us, and then we get some other wrestling events coming up as well, Dylan. Talk about those just briefly.
Well, we've got Crux Wrestling kicking off things on Thursday night. We've got the Scenic City Futures Showcase Tournament, which is presented by Action Wrestling this year, taking place at 2 p.m. on Saturday afternoon, actually at Saudi Daisy High School. And then we've got Southern Underground Pros, All Hells Breaks Loose in Nashville on Sunday afternoon, 3 p.m. Eastern, 2 p.m. Central is the bell time there. That's a stacked lineup, too. I mean, Marco Stunt versus Cabana Man Dan, Violence is Forever versus Daniel Maccabe and B-Boy, Anthony Henry versus J.D. Drake versus O'Shea Edwards versus Brett Eisen is the main event. So that's a stacked card. Bunch of other great stuff on that card as well. And listen, obviously, if you could come to this, we've been getting late ticket buys that have shocked me. You know, to be honest with you, Ben, like most of the out-of-towners typically buy really, really early. And, you know, this year, because we sold front row, this first year we've ever sold front row, on its own. And I think what's happened is because a lot of people realized they missed out on front row, which sold out in under 20 hours. I think they were like, I'll just wait till late. So we've actually had a surge in ticket sales in the last few days from people out of town. Usually it's the locals who buy late, but like today we sold tickets to people in Missouri, people in Connecticut, people in New Jersey. So that's heartening to see is that we're still, you know, we're in show week now, and people are still buying at a very, very strong clip. You can get those tickets, by the way, as I seamlessly transition to plug mode here, at sciwrestling.com. $15 floor seats, $10 general admission, $5 for the future showcase. I mean, it's very cheap. It's a very, very affordable show. I think our quality in terms of what we present stacks up with anybody. And on top of all that, on top of everything I just said, if you can't come, I wish you could. I hope you'll consider coming next year. But if you just are unable, I get it. A lot of things going on in people's lives. It's not always the easiest thing to have to do. But if you cannot be here with us in the Chattanooga area, all of the events, all the SCI events, including the showcase, as well as Crux Wrestling on Thursday, as well as Southern Underground Pro, stream live and free on IWTV.live as part of the mobile app launch celebration week. Our apps are out there. The independentwrestling.tv apps are available in the Android or the Google Play Store and in the Apple Store. You can get them on your Android or iOS devices. So as part of the big celebration, all of these Tennessee shows are available to stream for free.
So you can see the shows online. You can come to Scenic City Invitational if you are at all available. It will be the weekend of your year, both for wrestling reasons and for fan reasons. You'll have the best time. You will honestly have the best time you'll have all year. I guarantee it. Dylan, anything else you want to pitch?
I. We've got the visage of Scott Hensley.
We can see him. He's shaking his head. It's
waving
okay.
With contempt as Skype has done a turn on him, gone heel, gone rogue on him here at the end of the show.
It's okay.
So I will sign off for my comrade Scott Hensley. Of course, SCIWrestling.com, all your tickets, all your info available there. Also, follow us on Twitter at SCI Tournament. Any updates we have, anything going on, that's maybe we may not have covered, I'm sure you can find it on our Twitter feed at SCI Tournament. And then, you know, again, you really should come. But if you can't come, independentwrestling.tv. But you really should come because, as Ben noted, I promise you, the fan experience is unlike anything in independent wrestling. Maybe it might be unlike anything in the world, honestly. So, yeah, if you can make it, you should make it.
Follow me at Boston Nuga. For the I have pinned right now a list of all the fan events going on. It is very lengthy and does not include the good brothering that goes on, but it just includes the baseball game, the karaoke, the Crux event, the cake eating contest, the VHS horror show podcast. It includes the prom. It includes we're going to the flea market. Everything that's going on this week. It's going to be a packed week. It's going to be a really good time. We're doing boxing. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be an absolute lot of fun. So come join us at SCI. It'll be the best weekend of your year. Dylan, thank you so much. Get some sleep tonight because I don't know if you're going to get any for the rest of the week, man.
No, I'm not. I got way too much to do to sleep. But it was good to talk to you, man.
Good to talk to you, man. I'll talk to you soon. All right. Bye.